Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. And if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
It is a beautiful Saturday morning in mid-December. We're 4 days from Christmas, and the new year is just around the corner. Lots to think about when it comes to gardening. And that's why we have not one, but two experts today to answer your questions. We have Jeff Kendall, who is from Horseman Brothers. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Scott. Glad to be here.
And Glenn Kramer from G.R. Robinson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Scott.
All right. Well, before we get started, you guys haven't been on in a while, so why don't you refresh our memories about who you are and what you do? Let's start with you, Jeff.
Yeah, so I'm a project manager, landscape designer, account manager kind of thing with Horstman Brothers. Been there since 02. And we're a full-service landscape company. We do really about any kind of related services for landscaping, everything from routine turf mowing maintenance, fertilization, weed control, seeding, landscape installation, garden maintenance, you know, landscape bed maintenance, pruning, mulching, that kind of thing. And we do irrigation and outdoor lighting as well. So it's been a great run. Love working there, and it's we have a pretty large client base, and I think we do a real good job of keeping them on board. And year to year, we don't seem to lose a lot of clients, which is great. And we're still growing.
Sounds good. Glenn?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, this is Glenn Kramer. I'm the owner and operator of G.R. Robinson Seed and Service Company, along with my son, Ben. And he's going to get full control here in about 2 years, whether he wants it or not. But we're just a small, independent wholesale distributor of grass seed and fertilizer. And we have side hustles teaching at the Merrimack Community College and the Missouri Botanical Gardens, which we both enjoy very much.
All right. Well, these guys are here to answer your questions. This is an at-your-service program that KMOX has been doing for about 3 decades. And the reason it's lasted so long is because people call in. And the number to call in is 314-436-7900. There is an 800 number. You have to dial the 1. It's 1-800-925-1120. The local number again, 314-436-7900. What questions do you have as we enter the new year? What are some things you're thinking about for next year's garden, for your front yard, your backyard, trees? All of it on the table this morning. Let's start with a topic that, Glenn, you brought up off the air that I hadn't really thought about or knew about. It's wilt proofing.
Yeah.
What is wilt proofing?
Yeah, wilt proof or anti-desiccants are waxy type liquids that are applied mainly to evergreen trees and shrubs. And in particular, I'm a big proponent to use that for the first 2 years. What they do is slow down the loss of moisture throughout the evergreens. So instead of the water getting wicked out of the plant, the roots are kind of forced to absorb that water and reach out and grow more efficiently. So it's basically like a cheap insurance to protect your loss of your first 1-2 year evergreens. In particular, pines and spruces are just really any evergreens. I saw some beautiful inkberries today with full leaves on them, and those are the types of plants that would benefit from an application of a wilt-proof or anti-desiccant-type spray.
Hey, Glenn, yeah, I'm with you on that, and I do tell you hollies really benefit, you know, your holly shrubs or your smaller holly trees. Even some of the boxwoods, you know, there's a few varieties that maybe aren't quite as cold tolerant as some others, or they, you know, and like you were saying, just the first few years, you got to remember that those plants are, they don't have roots out beyond the canopy of the shrub or tree itself. So they're, if it just is light rain, they may not even get that much moisture up where the roots really are. So they are very vulnerable to dry out over the winter. The wind, and a lot of times we have low humidity in the winter time, you know. So they're just vulnerable, and that is a great thing to do to protect things.
And it is an easy application to make. You don't have to be a licensed applicator. You can buy these ready-to-use products at any hardware store and just soak down the leaves, and it's a very safe application.
What specifically would you be looking for at the store?
Wilt-proof is a kind of a common trade name, or just anything like transfilm or an anti-desiccant. If you say those words to somebody in the store, they should be able to guide you in the right direction.
Yeah, I was just going to add, from the physiology of the plant, if you can get the product on the underside of those leaves, that is the best, because the stomata on the bottom of the leaves is really where the moisture is exiting the plant. So, and I know that can be kind of hard to try to do, but that will give you the best success.
Okay, let's start with our first phone call. The number is 314-436-7900. Sue, you are up first on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. My question is about tree trimming. I live in an apartment, and there is an old oak in the front. And, I mean, it's probably 100 years old. The landlord finally trimmed the branch that was hanging over the roof. But for some reason, they did not cut that limb back to the trunk. They cut it mid-limb. So now there is this huge limb that's, like, cut, and it's hanging in mid-air. And I'm just wondering, I've seen this done other places down in the neighborhood, and I'm wondering, what is the rationale for not cutting that limb back to the trunk?
You're right. They didn't do the job correctly. You know, it would be the right answer there. You know.
Well, so that's what I figured. It just probably was an easier way to do it, because the limb is quite large, and it would have taken a lot of work to cut the rest of it off. Yeah, so okay.
Yeah, and with oaks are really, you know, there's a lot of issues with pruning oaks. You know, we got to really watch the time of year it's done and so forth. So it really is best to have a professional help with those kind of jobs, really. So I don't know.
It happened when I was at work, so I didn't see it, but I don't think they were professional. Thank you.
Not in this
okay,
industry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sue. We appreciate the phone call. 314-436-7900. What is your question this morning? What's on your mind about your garden or your yard? We have two guys who can answer your questions. That is Jeff and
Glenn.
Glenn, thank you. My brain is a little slow this morning. Hopefully.
Was that good last night?
Yeah, maybe. All right. It is the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, Camo X. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow, joined this week by a couple of guys who've been here before answering your questions, Jeff Kendall from Horstman Brothers and Glenn Kramer, G.R. Robinson. So the number to call is 314-436-7900. Let's see. How about planting? What should we be thinking about in terms of bulbs or trees planting at this time of year?
Yes, Scott, you know, both of those are good things for this time of year, you know, and here in St. Louis, you know, let's face it, winter's a really up and down season. You know, I'm sure we'll have some cold stretches and maybe some snow and that kind of thing, or rain, but there's a lot of days that are very good for getting out and getting things done. And certainly bulbs, we still have a good window to plant those. In January, I would say if you can get them in the ground, they'll be fine heading into early spring. Trees and shrubs are, it's a good time of year to plant those. They're, especially the deciduous plants, the ones that, you know, lose their leaves, they're dormant and they're easy to plant this time of year. And, survivability is usually pretty good. So it's, good time for different things. A lot of cleanup still needs to be done. Good time to, if you haven't gotten things cut back and cleaned up the beds and that sort of thing, or the lawn, it's a great time to do that. What are you thinking,
Glenn? It's even a great time to lay sod. I saw guys laying sod yesterday. It was a little cold for my taste, but if the sod farms will cut it, you can lay it, and it'll still adhere to the ground. We just saw the forecast up there in the next 10 days. It's going to be in the 40s and 50s, and I bet there'll be a lot of sod work after Christmas before the new year.
Yeah, when we have frozen nights versus then having temperatures in the 50s or 60s during the day, how does that affect things? Not a big deal?
No, not really. I know that the sod guys, I think what they do is they'll cut in the afternoon and then, you know, sell the product the next day. They can't go out and harvest when the ground's frozen, but if the ground's not frozen, they'll harvest their product and palletize it up and move it the next day. It does have a short life once it hits that pallet. It's got to get on the ground.
The number is 314-436-7900. That is the garden hotline. How about mulching? Can you talk, Jeff, about the proper way to do that?
Sure. In general, you know, we mulch for a couple reasons. You know, one is aesthetics. You know, sure, people like the way it looks and looks nice and clean and, you know, nice, like you're taking care of things. And then number two, and it'd be weed control is a big reason to mulch. And then moisture retention is big. And then this time of year is even just protecting the root system of your plants, you know, because it helps insulate the plant, and it moderates those changes in temperature, you know, that we go through. And again, here in St. Louis, we can have radical temperature changes in the winter. You know, it could be literally 55 degrees one day, and the next day we all know, we've been there, the highs only 35 or 30 or something. So mulch is good for those reasons. Key things to remember, you usually want to start with a good quality, depends really what you're mulching, but say it's landscape beds, you know, a good all bark kind of mulch is what we prefer at Horseman Brothers. I mean, for shrub and trees and those kind of things. If you're doing a lot of perennials, you know, compost type mulches work great for perennial flowers, you know. So that's what you want to do. And always remember, the real sweet spot for mulching is about 2.5 to 3 inches deep. We don't want to continually keep adding where we're getting, you know, 5-6 inches deep of undissolved mulch, you know. So
I think it's important to stir the old mulch before adding new mulch. You get pancake layering, some of those mulches can make a real water impervious surface. So it's always stir your old mulch before adding new mulch if you can.
Good advice, Glenn.
Okay, let's get back to the phones. Mary is on the garden hotline. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, first of all, I have one comment that he just talked about the weather. In Missouri, we can have all four seasons in one day, so I'm going to disagree with you right there. But my question is, I have a dogwood tree. It's supposed to be like a Korean dogwood tree, I believe, that the bark is coming off. And it's about a 30-year-old tree, and I was wondering, it doesn't bloom real well anymore. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And I was wondering if there's anything I can do to make sure it doesn't die.
Okay. When you say the bark's coming off, I mean, is it just the outer, extreme outer edges, or is it going all the way down into where you can see the wood,
No, it's just the outer edges.
Yeah, so I think what you might be describing, you said Korean dogwood. It sounds to me like it's a Kusa dogwood, and they do have a kind of an exfoliating bark, where especially as they get older, it'll lose some of the bark, or it's loose and that sort of thing, and that could be a simple thing that's what it does. Also, they are different cultivars of that plant bloom better than others, and if you got like just a plain regular Kusa dogwood and it's not one of the newer cultivars, sometimes those are sporadic bloomers actually. So could just be the tree itself, genetics.
I'm going to try deep root feeding that as well. If you haven't done that in a while, 30-year-old trees
might
need a little help.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. You too.
Happy holidays. Thank you for calling in. It's 314-436-7900 to talk to Glenn and Jeff. Jeff from Horstman Brothers, Glenn from G.R. Robinson, and we're talking whatever you have on your mind for your garden or your yard. But so far, we've hit some good topics, bulbs and tree planting, some mulching. How about winterizer?
Yeah, it's a great time to still add your fall fertilizer if you haven't done so. A lot of people wait for the leaves to be cleaned up and totally cleaned up, and that's not a bad practice. But it's not too late to add that last pound to pound and a half of nitrogen-based fertilizers for your cool season lawns. And all that'll do is just make the lawn green up a lot quicker in the spring, and we'll make it look a lot nicer, especially in these 50-degree weathers. We still might get some release of that nitrogen this year and growth this year. We mowed our own lawn like a week ago, so cool season lawns aren't through growing for the season.
Glenn was just talking about mowing, that's a great way to kind of do that detail cleaning too, because now most people have done maybe their heavy clean, but there's still a lot of scattered leaves around and things. And if you can mow and either just grind those things up if they're not real deep and that works real well, or even if you want to bag it, that's, I'm not a big advocate for bagging, but this time of year, it's a great way to clean the lawn up, and it looks really nice when you're done doing that. Just pick a nice day and don't try not to do it when it's frozen or anything, but that's about it. It's a great way to.
I woke up this morning with a bunch of Bradford pear leaves from those trees across the street, and the wind can change your plans for the day, that's for sure.
That's true. Okay, up next we have Brian. Brian, you are on the Garden Hotline with Glenn and Jeff.
Hey guys, I got a quick question maybe to what you were talking about there. I've got a pretty mature white oak tree in the front yard. Doesn't really have any dead limbs on it, but it is forever losing the twigs, one, 2 foot, tips. And it's not just any particular time of the year. It's kind of all year. But summertime and the spring, everything blooms out. It leaves very well. Is that kind of a precursor to it starting to die?
Good question, or good thing to bring up. Are these twigs that fall off, are they green or dead? Are they brittle, or is it like they?
No, they're dead. Very brittle.
Yeah,
but, you can't notice it in the summertime when everything's leaved out, because there doesn't appear to be any dead pieces.
Okay. This year, one thing it could be is some dead twigs from the cicadas earlier in the year. That would be a real easy thing to think of. Outer twigs dying back, I don't know. There are some, blight diseases and things, but you would actually think that would be getting deeper into the tree and, you'd start losing bigger pieces and so forth. So I don't know. I do think if you just noticed that this year, I would think could be good odds it's a cicadas, because after they laid their eggs, the outer part of the twig will die and eventually it drops off, and that's how they keep their life cycle going.
But it's been about the past 5 years. It's kind of becoming a pain is the bottom line.
Do you have many squirrels in that tree by chance?
Not in that one. We have a lot of squirrels and a lot of woods around us, but really aren't any squirrels, they're not in that tree. And, you know, just looking at the end of them, I've seen the ones where they have the real clean little cut where something was, a couple years ago was eating them or burrowing into them in the twigs. But that's not the case right now, I don't think.
Yeah. So, you might just deep root feed it and give it a little bit of help, because every limb that's lost is just a lost potential for leaves, and leaves are what feed the trees. So sure, if you feel like you have less leaves, you just might make up some of that production with a deep root fertilization.
Okay, well, less leaves is kind of preferable at this point. At least we have a lot of leaves.
Agreed.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian, for calling in. The number is 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Jeff and Glenn are here for the next hour and a half to take your questions. So let's continue on the Garden Hotline after a short break.
Hi, this is Bob Costas, proud KMOX alum, and from my family to yours, happy holidays.
Happy holidays from KMOX.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. Happy holidays from us to you. We have Glenn and Jeff this morning to answer your questions. As we get to the new year, what are you thinking about in terms of plantings and trees and shrubs and your garden and your yard? We have the answers this morning at your service on the Garden Hotline, and the number is 314-436-7900. What kind of jobs are you getting calls for right now, looking forward into the new year?
Yeah, Scott. So, this wintertime for what we do, like at Horseman Brothers, we're sure we're out there trying to do some things and help our clients and with cleanups and different things right now and some planting and things. But it's also a big time for just preparation and getting going. And I would encourage people, if you're thinking about doing some landscaping this coming spring or even this winter, reach out to your landscape professionals like Horseman Brothers and give us a call and, come out and take a look at things and start making plans for the coming season. So it's a lot of preparation this time of year. Mm-hmm.
And on the wholesale side, a lot of my clients are planning for taking advantage of early order programs, and my do-it-yourself people are verifying what products will be available in the spring and things like that. So it's just a really good planning time and making sure costs are in line for what they think they're going to offer for the coming season.
Okay, let's get back to the phones. 314-436-7900. Dave, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
What's going on, gentlemen?
Morning, Dave.
Morning, Dave.
Hey, two simple questions. One for this time of year and another one for the spring. My first question is as far as garden prep. Getting the ground ready. During a normal garden process, you're going to lose some of the nutrients. So to replace those nutrients, talk a little bit about that as far as including maybe worms into the soil and soil prep. And then as far as the spring goes, I have some questions about fruit trees. Which fruit trees you have to plant in pairs so they can, produce, and which ones do you not have to plant in pairs?
Okay, so, garden preparation, that's a great topic, and so you're right. I mean, the soil for whether it's flower beds or vegetable gardens, either one, it needs to be maintained at a high level of fertility. And one of the best ways to do that, especially organically, is to add, incorporate some good organic compost, compost or leaf mold, mulch, that kind of thing to the soil. And that's easily done, in the wintertime. So I would encourage you to go ahead and do that to get that off your plate. So when spring comes, you're ready to plant and enjoy it. On the fruit trees, I'm not an expert, but you know, apples especially need, you know, not most nowadays. I know there are a lot of self-pollinators, right. but a lot of apple species or varieties need pollinators, you know. So that's you just got to make sure when you buy them, you understand the, you know, what is required, you know, to have it bear fruit. Things like cherries and so forth, they're more self-pollinating and not as big an issue. Trying to think, pears, I'm pretty sure they're self-pollinating as well. There's good information out there, obviously. I mean, you know, you can use your Google or whatever, your phone. There's also a lot of books and things. So
that's I think for soil prep, soil testing is a greatly underutilized tool this time of the year, and it's a great time to take your plugs and send them into the University of Missouri or any competent lab that can do your soil testing. I'm also a big proponent of animal-based organic fertilizers. I'm not a big proponent. I talked about this about a month ago. I don't like the human waste products like Milorganite as feeds for gardens. The heavy metals are a concern for me. Somebody called and said it's on the label, you can use it, but you know, it doesn't mean it's good for you. You know, when you use human-based fertilizers, it eliminates the ability to call those products grown as organic. So there's a reason for that on the label. So I would stick to the plant-based organic fertilizers. I think it's a safer option.
Cool. Thank you. And it's just the primary goal in getting your is it you're looking for nitrogen in the soil?
No. In my opinion, you're looking more for what the pH is and the ratio of magnesium and calcium. That's what's going to produce stronger plants and deeper roots, in my opinion. Nitrogen ebbs and flows, and certain plants demand more nitrogen at times of the year and less nitrogen at times of the year. So I wouldn't be concerned at all with the nitrogen ratio in the soil right now. It's more the pH, the amounts of phosphorus, potassium, and magnesium in the soil. And then you can get real in-depth. You can talk to a soil nerd, and he'll tell you about the CEC or the cation exchange, and it'll go right over your head like a jet plane. It won't mean anything to you. But the pH is, in my opinion, your real money, what you're testing for.
On the plug, will a soil conservation officer do that, or does it have to go to a university?
University of Missouri Extension in St. Charles tests them in the university. The Extension Service on Page has an office that I think you can drop off your soil samples to. But go online and make sure you're taking a soil sample properly. You just don't take one big chunk out of your middle of your garden. You want to take like 4 or 5 inch plugs, 1 inch square, from as many different spots in the garden as you can, and you blend all those together and really only submit about 2 cups. But you don't just take a 2 cup sample. You take a bowling ball sample and submit a tennis ball, if that makes sense.
Okay. Thanks, guys. A lot of good information. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Dave. Good questions. I appreciate the call at 314-436-7900. We have Jeff Kendall and Glenn Kramer here to take your questions on the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
And today we have Glenn Kramer and Jeff Kendall. Jeff is from Horstman Brothers. Glenn is from G.R. Robinson. Answering your questions at your service, the Garden Hotline, a 3-decade-old program on this very station. Let's go next to Alan. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Happy holidays.
You too.
I'm calling. I have a big old farmhouse with a long drive up near Mark Twain Lake, and I wanted to frame the entry to the drive on either side with a tree, and I've got it in my mind that I want a magnolia. And I guess my two questions, and a magnolia, of course, is going to be a little pricey in this area. So my question is there a particular species, I guess, of a magnolia that might work best? And is that, you know, that's another 100 miles north. Do you think a magnolia would survive?
Okay, so when we talk about magnolia, there's two basic types. You know, one would be the deciduous magnolias that typically bloom very early in the spring, and they, you know, they drop their leaves in the wintertime, okay? And that's 100 miles north of St. Louis. That's probably going to be your best bet, okay? The southern magnolia, and that may be what you're thinking of, I'm not sure, but they have the waxy evergreen leaves. And, you know, we in St. Louis are, you know, fairly on the edge of their range, you know, where they like to live. So 100 miles could make a difference on those. You're right. Either way, I don't know how long and how many trees you're talking about on either side and, you know, how big you want to start with. But, sure, that could end up being a fairly good sized job, you know.
Okay.
I would tell you though, if you really want the mag, I don't, what kind were you thinking of, or do you know? Or,
well, I was really looking at the waxy leaf kind.
Okay, so the I will tell you, if you go that direction, that you definitely want to get what's called a Bracken Browns, you know, southern magnolia. That's the most cold hardy tolerant of the southern magnolias, and it's got the, if you look at them, you see a lot of them in St. Louis. They've got the kind of the brown pubescence on the underside of the leaf. You know, they kind of have a brown tone on the bottom of the leaf.
Those are a real candidate for that anti-desiccant application the first two winters. You're going to lose them. You're going to lose it in the first two years. That's for sure.
And the bloom is later in the year, and it smells great, you know, and I mean, those are all pluses. Besides the cold tolerance on the downside, you know, they drop leaves at a time of year when you don't really want to be cleaning leaves. You know, it's usually May and June and into July, you know, that they're dropping leaves. They just, every year they lose some of the, like a pine tree or something, they lose some of the interior leaves, and they can be kind of messy, actually.
Watch your spacing. They get pretty big. There's some really beautiful ones around my neighborhood, and they're 30 to 40 feet wide easily.
Yeah, I've had good success with river birch also, and that would be less expensive if I put a couple of those on each side of the drive.
Yeah, that's a great tree for Missouri. You know, they're and if you're out there in the open, it may not be as big an issue. They grow fast, and they're, you know, attractive and texture and bark and different things. You know, they got a lot of great qualities. I will say they drop sticks all year long, you know, especially in the wintertime. You know, it's like you got to get out there and clean up the sticks. So they're, you know, any tree's got its ups and downs, you know. I mean, there's pros and cons to all of them.
If you got a wet area, your birches will definitely like that better.
Yep.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. 314-436-7900. Bill, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, thank you, Jeff, Glenn.
Morning.
Morning.
I've got a butternut tree that's about 25 years old, and it's never had any blooms or fruit. I just wondered, since there's no other white walnuts around, maybe it's not getting pollinated.
You know, that could definitely be an issue. Have you done any research on that at all, or looked it up? Mm-hmm. But I think you're probably onto something there.
No, I'm not much of a.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They. I know that. You know, they do need pollen, you know. I believe I'm right, they're not self-pollinating, you know, so that could be a very good, easy reason why they're not. You know, a lot of trees are, you know, how old did you say this, 30 years? I mean, it may just be getting to where it could start, you know. I mean, some of those take a long time to really get going. Walnuts seem to, you know, produce fruit at an early age, you know. But I don't know. Butternut's a cool tree, though. I haven't, you know, you don't see a whole lot of them. It's very, very nice.
It's the only one around in our part of the country.
Yeah.
Enjoy what you have.
It wouldn't pollinate from a regular walnut, then, would it, the black one?
I don't know that for a fact. We can try to look into that maybe in a break here and see if we can help get back to you with an answer on that. So.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks for the question, Bill. The number is 314-436-7900. That's the Garden Hotline. We have Jeff Kendall from Horstman Brothers and Glenn Kramer from G.R. Robinson here taking your calls, and we have another hour to go. If this is at your service, so if you have a question about your home, your garden, your yard, let us know. And the number again is 314-436-7900. The Garden Hotline will continue on KMOX.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
And today we have a couple of guests returning to answer your questions. That's Glenn Kramer from G.R. Robinson and Jeff Kendall from Horstman Brothers. We have a few phone calls to get to right now, but still some room in the bank. It's 314-436-7900. Let's start with Margie. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hello.
Good morning, Margie.
Good morning. I have, first of all, a comment. The guy that called in about the butternut, they do cross-pollinate with all the other walnuts, but then the fruit is something totally different. So you get kind of a combination fruit. just from personal experience, we had a couple in our yard, and all the fruits were wrong because they all pollinated with each other. Hmm. And I did have a question, though, about ash. We had an ash tree in our yard, and it died. And I'd love to plant something similar. Are there any varieties of ash that are available that are more resistant to the emerald ash borer?
You know, really, there's none that I can tell you with confidence are resistant to the ash borer. I will say the most vulnerable appears to be the green ash, you know, varieties, you know, and they were planted. And they're the ones that normally turn more the yellow gold color in the fall versus the white ash, which are more the burgundy kind of colors in the fall. I mean, that is an observation, and I mean, you can see it driving around. I mean, it seems like the green ash are just, you know, they just get devastated. Yeah. They're dying all over, you know, right now. So
is there if you were to get a new ash, is there any kind of treatment that you can give it on a yearly basis that would help?
Well, they can be injected, and I think I've even got clients that we haven't done a whole lot of that at Horstman Brothers, but I've got some clients that use tree services to keep the ash trees going, and usually it's like every other year they have it injected, and it's fairly pricey, but you know, I do have some clients that still have nice looking ash trees.
There's so many good options out there. I'd encourage you to just rethink the buying something that's going to need immediate insecticide applications. There's so many nice trees out there. You go to a good garden center, they'll steer you in the right direction, in my opinion.
Is there something that grows in a similar shape to an ash that
maples
you would recommend? We got quite a few maples already.
Yeah. You know, I mean, ash, being more kind of oval, I guess, shaped, basically.
Mm-hmm. Not as open.
You know, I'll tell you a tree, I mean, I've loved it for years and they're very popular now. It'd be a little bit more pyramidal shaped, but, you know, black gum are great, and they grow pretty fast or sturdy, you know, just really don't see a lot of problems with them. That would be a good one.
That is one I was thinking of, so... Okay, that sounds great.
Yeah, that's a great tree.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. 314-436-7900. Up next, let's go to DJ. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Hey, good morning. Merry Christmas, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I had a question about azalea bushes. My house faces the south. 5 azalea bushes, 3 of them, they can get about 75-80% sun. Have thinned out. Had dead woody limbs on it. And the other 2 are really, really well developed. Went to the garden center, got the azalea food, and they seem to bud a little bit better, but the branches that are the dead ones I broke off really thinned out the bush. Will they fill back in, or is it too late? They're about 15 to 20 years old.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm kind of maybe a little surprised that those are doing – they've been around 20 years. South side is tough for azaleas. You know, typically azaleas prefer to be on either a north or eastern exposure. Sometimes a west is okay, although there's several issues there. One, they really don't like full sun all the time, you know, and south exposure, it might be just very hot for them, you know. The other thing is wind in the winter, you know, is bad on a south or west. You know, I know we sometimes get wind out of the north, but our prevailing wind direction is usually southwesterly. So that can dry them out. We were talking earlier about the desiccation in the winter. That could be a part of the problem. As far as the dead wood, your best is just go in and actually prune that out. And then if you, as far as trying to thicken them back up, you know, you can gradually start to prune them. You know, the recommended time would be after they bloom in the spring and prune them back to another branch, you know, so that, and then gradually that may force them to fill in a little bit lower. They're probably not going to grow new shoots, you know, coming off the bottom, really. I don't really see a lot of that on azaleas.
The common mistake I see is people water azaleas and they get water directly on the leaves, and that's not good for them, especially during the summer. You know, you want to water that, only water the roots when you water azaleas, if that's possible.
Okay, let's move on to our next caller. It is Linda. You are up next with Jeff and Glenn on the Garden Hotline.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
I have a bulb and perennial bed in the front of my house that's east-facing, speaking of direction, and it's about 15 foot by 10, and a lot of things come up on it without a problem, but I have clover that gets in there, and it of course comes in when everything's really popping up and it's hard to kill it off. And I've tried using preen in like February and in the fall to try and, you know, kill that off, and occasionally I'll get a tree or whatever in there too that, you know, I can get out, and that's easy enough to spray that. But the clover is my big problem. You have any suggestions on what to put it down now or maybe February to help kill that, keep it from growing through the bed all the time?
Hey, Linda, you know, the clover, and if it's bulbs, right, you know, they're coming up in the spring, they're spring bloomers, and then they're done. Is that correct? Or
I have some bulbs, and then I have a bunch of perennials. So I have rutabagas and coneflowers.
Okay, so I was thinking it was like all just, you know, daffodils or tulips or something, and I was going to tell you, make sure you kill that clover off, you know, in the fall, or, you know, and then start clean, because then after they bloom, you know, and the foliage goes brown, you could treat it again with a herbicide, you know. So since you got perennials mixed in there, you're going to have to you know, maybe carefully spray the clover if you can in between things. Pull it, you know, mechanical removal is a possibility too. It's not a huge bed. You said 10 by some, you know, you might be able to do that. Any thoughts? I'm not real sure. I'm pre-emergent.
150 square feet is what you described. You know, there's a pre-emergent called Snapshot that would be more effective than preen. Preen is just Treflan, but Snapshot has another active ingredient that would control broadleaf weeds better than regular preen would. But at that square footage, I'd be a fan of more mechanical removal. Clover has some rhizomes that you'll have to deal with, but if you mechanically, you know, pull with the big stuff and then spot spray the little stuff as it comes up, clover's pretty easy to distinguish and kill with selective herbicides.
Yeah. It seems to grow right in the middle of my Ruby Giz, and it's hard to get to them. By the time it finally comes up and I spot it, it's kind of hard, but I try and pull it. It's hard.
That square footage. That just might be a labor of love, Linda.
It is.
Yeah. There you go.
So, well, I'll try that snapshot and see if that helps. And I know I need to put more mulch down this year because it's all gone again. So, we'll try that again. But I thank you for your help.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. It is 314-436-7900. That's the Garden Hotline. Glenn and Jeff answering your questions. We still have some segments left, so stay tuned on the Voice of St. Louis.
Diverse opinions, mutual respect. That's the politics you'll find at KMOX. Your connection to St. Louis and the region.
Show mommy kissing Santa Claus underneath.
It is the Garden Hotline. The week of Christmas, or it's about to be the week of Christmas. It is December 21st, and 4 days away. Wednesday is Christmas Day. We have some gardening things to get to. 314-436-7900 is the number to call to get your question in for Glenn Kramer of G.R. Robinson or Jeff Kendall of Horstman Brothers. Glenn, during the break, we were talking about one of our news stories this morning is that it's Green Day at Lambert Airport, and that is when thousands of soldiers from Fort Leonard Wood and elsewhere come through to fly out to their hometowns. A lot of them are young trainees, and they've been going through their training, and this might be the first time they get a chance to go back home and have their families sort of celebrate their military service and their communities doing so as well. But you have a connection to this.
Yeah, I joined the Marine Corps in 1980 right out of high school and benefited from the gracious services that the USO offered up at Lambert Field from time to times. And I'm currently a volunteer up there now. And if you're looking for an endeavor that you get to see young, fresh faces and people that are willing to put their life on their line for our country and protect our freedom, it is an extremely rewarding volunteer situation. Back in the day, we would call it Exodus Day, and those buses would show up, and there'd be hundreds and hundreds of soldiers and men and women that proudly serve our country. And it's really gratifying to just smile, serve them a cup of coffee or a meal, and just welcome them and wish them well. So if you're looking for an endeavor that's very rewarding, I'd encourage you to consider being a volunteer with the USO. You have to pass a background check. So, Jeff, I don't know if you'd be qualified or not, but just maybe you could get in there.
Yeah. I think we'd that's awesome, Glenn, that you do that. I didn't know that about you. Yeah, that's all. Learned something today. Very good.
Yeah.
It's great.
Thank you for doing that. Up next, we have Jim. Jim, you're on the Garden Hotline with Jeff and Glenn.
Hi. I have a tree that's about 25 years old. And maybe about, I don't know, 8-10 years ago, a big branch was broken off of it, maybe 6 inches in diameter. So I cut it off about a quarter inch away from the trunk, and that's basically where it broke. And I just happened to notice that, that I don't know if it's a woodpecker or whatever has where that was starting to heal, a big hunk of that area was laying on the ground. Is there anything I should fill that with to try to prevent, water and things to get in there, or any ideas?
You know, Jim, generally it's, recommended, really pruning sealers are not a recommended thing anymore. They're really not. So I really wouldn't coat it with tar type product or anything like that, or definitely don't use concrete. That just even holds more water. The main thing I would tell you is hopefully that wound will, you know, heal back over. I'm not looking at it. You know, it's hard to see what might maybe really caused that. I don't know if the, you know, if it's a lot of woodpecker activity, it tells me there's probably insects underneath there, and that some of the bark just died off underneath there, and there could be a lot of different bugs underneath there. So peel off any loose bark, you know, that you want that to go away. And if you can, if you've got like rotten type wood, go ahead and scrape it out, you know, if you can, just to remove it and have that as clean and firm as possible. And then really you're just hoping that it, you know, grows back, the wound heals, and the cambium layer grows back over that and eventually forms new bark on the outside.
Yeah, scar tissue will cover that up, probably.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't think you have anything to worry about there.
Thanks for the call, Jim. It's 314-436-7900. Glenn and Jeff answering your questions this morning. Gentlemen, what else should we talk about right now as we enter the new year? What should we be thinking about? And how far out, sorry, this is a double question, how far out should we book your services?
Well, you know, like for landscaping, truly, winter's a great time to get with your, you know, designer people or designers and get things drawn up and proposals ready and get things lined up to get the work done, like I said, either yet this winter or early next spring. No doubt, you know, spring is a great season to plant things. I mean, actually in our industry anymore, we stay busy really year round. You know, we don't see dramatic up and downs every month. There's usually a little dip in the middle of the summer maybe, and, you know, but fall's very busy, and you know, spring is very busy. And, you know, more and more we're busier in the winter than we used to be. It just the way it goes. But I would get with your professionals right now if you're thinking about design and get that thing, get things drawn up and ready to go. So that's part of what winter's for in our industry.
Yeah. You know, on my side, it's you know, what I encourage people to do is just pick a plan, but just stick to one plan. There's nothing more frustrating than somebody come to me in June and say, you know, I was doing a plan, and then I read something on the internet, so I switch, and I've got three different guys giving me advice. And the old saying, too many cooks in the soup isn't good for anything, but especially for lawn care or doing planting or horticulture work in general. Just find somebody you trust and stick with them, and I'm pretty sure they'll lead you in the right direction.
On to Glenn's point on turf care, and we at Horseman Brothers, we do a lot of turf care work, and I would tell you that also time goes quick, and you know, you got to be thinking anymore, you know, that like if you're worried about getting a crabgrass preventer down, you know, and it's late February or March, you know, it's not really a whole lot later than that, you know. So you want to get things lined up and make sure your provider knows that you're on board and they can do it when the conditions dictate, you know, if we don't know what kind of weather we're really going to have. And it's, I know last time I was here with Glenn, he was must have said it 10 times, it's really all about the soil temperature. And, right. And you know, if we have a mild, you know, a mild January, then that means in February that soil's starting to get warmed up enough where you need to start applying things. And, yeah, I actually saw some dandelions blooming this week. Yeah, it's kind of different.
Yeah, grass only knows one thing, soil temperature, not calendar.
For sure. Let's go back to the phones. Brian, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hey, guys. Good morning. You were just talking about turf. My lawn is seeded by hand. I don't have sod or anything like that. And I have a woody weed. I think it might be Lespediza. Mm-hmm. But, oh, my gosh, is it obnoxious. And I can't find very much that will kill it. Mm-hmm. So I think I need to use a pre-emergent. But I don't know what pre-emergent to use. I live in the woods. I live with lots of cedar trees around. But in the spring, my grass will come up nice and green, and my wife will be happy, and I will tell her, look at it now, because as soon as this other stuff starts growing, it will not look that way. Do you have any advice for me, please?
Yeah, pre-emergence on Lespediza are just so-so. You're really better off with selective post-emergent herbicides.
Okay.
And
okay.
The labels are pretty clear on whether it'll collect, control it or not. But Lespediza, in my opinion, is a product of too short of mowing of the lawn, no irrigation, no fertility in the good grass. So the best defense against weeds, honestly, isn't a bunch of herbicides or pre-emergence, but it's a good thick lawn. And you achieve that by aerating and overseeding and mowing properly. That, to me, is the number one failure of lawns in St. Louis. When I teach my classes and people bring me pictures, I can tell in 2 seconds whether they're mowing properly or not. So in that situation where a husband and wife are talking about mowing heights, I remind them that I'm a horticulturalist and not a marriage counselor, and you have to mow at 3 to 3.5 inches or you're going to have Lespediza every year probably.
And is Lespediza obnoxious? Does it go everywhere fast?
Oh, yeah. And it's woody.
Oh, yeah.
And it's difficult to control. You'll definitely have to do more than one application of a selective herbicide to control that. I've never seen anybody wipe that out with one selective application.
And then one more quick question. I put a layer of topsoil, don't ask me how much because I don't know, but surely not enough, over the wonderful clay in Missouri. Is the pelletized lime the best to use to try to break that down? What do I do to try to improve that clay soil other than get rid of it all?
organic-based fertilizers and core aeration more so than lime. So lime will add calcium, but it will increase the pH. And you could add gypsum and add calcium without doing anything to your pH. But if you have a layer of existing soil and add new soil without doing some poking or scratching or scarification, you're going to have that pancaking like we talked about with the mulch earlier. It's always important to scarify what you have before you add new soil.
Cool. Thanks for your show, guys.
Good luck. Yeah.
Thanks for calling in, Brian. We will continue with your phone calls. We've got a couple more segments to go. 314-436-7900. Jeff and Glenn are here answering your questions. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
So this is Christmas. And what have you done? Another year over.
It is 4 days away. Wow. December 21st, Garden Hotline on KMOX. Glenn and Jeff are here. Jeff Kendall from Horstman Brothers, Glenn Kramer from G.R. Robinson, and they are answering your questions on our hotline, which is 314-436-7900. Whether you have questions about winterizing or planting bulbs or trees or mulching, whatever it is, hopefully, and we've done a pretty good job so far of answering those questions, we'll keep it going. Let's go next to Bob. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My neighbors has been identified have huge crops of nimbleweed, and it tends to get into my yard. And what I do is this time of year, it's easily identified because it's dead. And is there any way to kill that stuff? Because we'd be gone, things like that, they have no effect at all.
Right.
And their yards are so full of it that when I look at them now, they're pretty much brown almost. But anyway, but when you start pulling it up, it kind of comes up, it kind of connects to itself and pulls up fairly easily. But is there any way to keep my yard from being invaded by that stuff?
Sure. You can't really pull that because of the rhizome system in the ground. But there's a product called mesothione. It goes by the trade name of Tenacity or Miso. It's in a herbicide called Sublime that if you make a post-emergent application while it's actively growing, probably mid-April, early April, maybe early May, you'll knock that out in 1 to 2 applications. You could sweet-talk your neighbors into letting them do an application over there, and that might help it too, but yeah, there's no real pre-emergent for it, and you could spray Roundup, which is a non-selective herbicide, but you could actually selectively kill that very easily with an active ingredient called mesotrione. You'll have very good results.
Mesotrione.
Correct.
Okay. All right. I'll be on the internet looking for that.
Things
Thank
like
you very
Rubigon
much.
Will do nothing to that.
No, it doesn't.
At all,
oh.
Right.
No. Yeah. Mesotrione. Correct. All right. Thank you for the program.
Yeah. Good
very
luck.
Much.
Thanks for calling in, Bob. We still have a few minutes to take your questions at 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Ken. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning. Merry Christmas. I have a couple questions for you, fellas. One is, I have a dogwood tree that we planted about 7 years ago, and it just doesn't seem to grow. It leaves out every year. It's got leaves all summer, but it just kind of stagnant growth. And the other thing is, what do you do for wild onions?
Okay, so that dogwood, you know, it could be several different things, but sounds like maybe it just isn't getting rooted in right. How are you? Are you fertilizing at all? It may need a little jump start.
Well, I haven't really fertilized it, and where it's planted at, this was a new home construction. And there was a lot of, you know, what I'd say, heavy equipment area there, compact in the soil.
Yeah, dogwoods are, you know, most trees obviously like nice soil, but they are very, you know, they really do prefer a organic-based kind of soil, a woodland-type soil, you know. I mean, good topsoil, you know, not just hard-pan clay, you know. And the fact that you said the tree's holding leaves all summer, though, that's encouraging because, you know, if it was too bad or if they were, you know, if it was drowning out because it's wet all the time from being in the clay or what, you know, that it'd probably be dead by now, you know. So I would think – you know, fertilizing and because it is what you're describing, a compacted area, do a little what we call vertical aeration.
Okay.
You could actually drill some holes around the tree and fill it with like an organic fertilizer sand mix or something like that, you know, just to get more air down into the root system. The other thing is it in full sun? Because, you know, dogwoods will live in sun, but you know, they do prefer kind of slight, you know, half day sun or something like that, not like
right.
all day, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely an all day sun there.
Water, you know, how are you? Do you keep it watered regularly during the summer? I mean,
yes,
not like continually, but it, you know, right. I would tell you it needs at least once a week, give it a drink if we're not in a wet phase. You know.
Okay, sure. Okay, great.
Your onions, in my opinion, are they don't hide. That you know exactly where they are. You can mechanically remove those and not have to use any herbicides at all. The bulbs are usually about an inch to maybe 2 inches below the soil, but just get a hand trowel and make a circle about an inch bigger than the size of the onion growth and dig those up and replace them. There are selective herbicides that'll kill those onions, but they're waxy. And so I tell my clients a lot of times to step on them first and lay the onions over and then spray the herbicides on it. You get more surface coating of the herbicides on the onions, but it's a bulb. And so they're going to be tough to kill with just one application, but if you only have a few, I would encourage you just to dig them up.
No, we have a good crop of them.
Well, if you're looking for some good exercise this winter, it might be a good little side project to go out and
dig
them up.
Oh, yeah, they're coming up now.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I see garlic and onions both right now.
All right. Well, thank you, fellas.
Good luck, yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for the phone call, 314-436-7900. Jan, you're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, thank you. I have a ranch home in Darden Prairie. I have no trees in my front yard. Not a lot of trees in our subdivision, actually. And what I'd like to do is plant perhaps an ornamental tree and maybe a couple shrubs on either side and then have something like rock outcroppings or a little, you know, just some little rock to kind of make it look like more of a feature than just a tree. And I was just wondering, who do I go to get, you know, a tree that is a good tree for the area, that someone that I know will plant it well, because I'm familiar that sometimes, You know, people who even say they can plant trees don't plant them well. So do I go to just a garden center? Do I go to an arborist? What kind of person do I go to say, you know, please help me design this and implement it?
Jan, I'd start, you know, with, you know, like someone like us, Horseman Brothers. You know, we can actually come out and look at that with you and make some, you know, recommendations on what we would do. And then we can follow through and install it as well.
Okay, because, I mean, it's not a big job, and a lot of these people do really big jobs. And I just don't want my job to be, well, you know. This isn't a very big job.
No, and that's got to fit with the right, you know, the certain companies are going to be better. Like we are, we do a ton of residential work. You know, it's not just all like big commercial work. We love our residential work, actually. And we do small jobs as well as big ones, you know. So I would encourage you to give us a call.
Okay.
Probably
right.
Be me that comes out and looks at it.
You know? That wasn't your mom that just called, was it, Jeff?
No.
Okay, well, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good luck.
Thanks for the call. 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline, and we have one more segment left, so it'll probably be a lightning round if we can squeeze that in. So if you got a question, hop on the phones right now, 314-436-7900. We'll be right back on the Garden Hotline.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
And today we have Glenn Kramer from G.R. Robinson and Jeff Kendall from Horstman Brothers taking your phone calls at 314-436-7900. Up next, Gary, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, I've got a shady area in the back of the yard that I cannot get grass to grow in, and I have trouble getting the energy to go out and water it. What's your thoughts about planting clover?
That's become a real popular, especially the micro clovers, Gary, is becoming popular. And
shady.
Yeah, they'll do okay in the shade, but it won't take any traffic whatsoever. So if you have kids or dogs walking on it, don't expect great results with that. But the more you can do to limb up your trees to increase airflow and sunlight, you'll have a better chance. And if you do want to try grass one more time, a couple of things. Like I said before, you can't mow it short, and you really don't have to worry about a pre-emergent, because if it's that much shade, you won't grow crabgrass. You just get a good shade mix. Mow it at 3 to 4 inches if you can. And in the summertime when it lays down, don't think it's dying. That's a dormancy of a cool season grass when it's hot out. Just let it go dormant and mow it once a month at the most in July and August. And if you, you know, just look into your soul and try to get that hose going for you. That's all you can do.
Was the micro clover is what I was thinking about. The only traffic I have is deer.
Yeah. Well, they'll like the clover even better.
Well, doesn't that take a deep root or something to help with water?
Yeah, you're going to have to water. No matter what you plant, you're going to have to water it the first year to get it established. That's for sure.
So a micro clover or some other kind of clover, is it even a possibility?
Sure. Yeah, it's always an option. You'll have to work up the soil and get rid of all the stuff that's there. Probably power rake it smooth and then plant, and you would do that in the spring more so than now.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much.
Good luck. Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Gary. Up next we have Mary. You're on the Garden Hotline. Hello, Mary.
Yeah. I have a question. I have a really obnoxious vine that grows up through honeysuckle, which, of course, is really obnoxious. But this thing has a whole lot of thorns on it, and I can see it really well right now because the honeysuckle leaves are all gone. Is there something, I've cut it several times, but it just branches off. Is there something I can paint on that to stop it from, you know, continuing to grow? And I don't want to use Roundup.
Well, if you want to kill it, you're going to have to use a herbicide, you know, you're right. You need to cut it and then almost immediately paint it with you know, like Roundup may work since it's a vine, or Tordon, which would be the preferred product, you know, to kill brush or vines or things like that. So probably what you're going to have to do, the thorny vine, I'm trying to think, it's probably twin vine or twin flower, maybe. I don't know.
Rose, wild rose.
Yeah. Or is it, yeah. What does it, well, is it got a large leaf or real small leaves?
Pretty large leaf. Yeah. Pretty large. And it's very hardy. I mean, it just grows straight up, and it's got like, I swear, like it seems like 1,000 thorns per every 2.5 inches. So if you grab it, it really hurts. You know, I've done that one time.
Yeah. So really you would be best just, you know, like we said, bite the bullet and use the herbicide, you know, right after you cut it. And, that should kill it down to the root and, you know, take care of the problem.
Yeah. All right. Good luck. Let's go to Melanie. We've just got a minute left. So Melanie, go ahead.
So I'm calling about a tulip tree that had been cut down just to the stump in our neighborhood. And there's all these big mushrooms around it. And one neighbor is concerned about it, one neighbor is not. Somebody said they're oyster mushrooms, but is there an issue with this?
Well, those mushrooms are, you know, they're a fungi, and they like decaying wood. And so the roots are, you know, in there, and they're decaying, and there's really not much you can do about it chemically at all. You know, just if you want to physically remove them, you know, and throw them away, and they'll probably come back again. And, you know, that you're going to find that they're some of them are more they grow best even in the early fall, you know, especially after a little rain. Sometimes they more in the spring. But thank you. Mm.
That is Jeff Kendall, also Glenn Kramer. He's from G.R. Robinson. Jeff Kendall from Horstman Brothers. Fellas, great job as always. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. We'll have you again on the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Let it snow, let it snow.